Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today's speaker will be David Brown, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce. He'll speak on the topic, Business in Omaha, A Look into the Future. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, November 19, 2015, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Ann Peterson, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
12 years ago, David Brown arrived in Omaha to take on the role as president and CEO of the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce. Under David's leadership, the Greater Omaha Economic Development Partnership has successfully landed 535 projects representing 27,571 jobs and more than $5.2 billion, that's a B, in capital investment since 2004. Just this year, David was named the Association of Chamber of Commerce Chairman's Award. In the past few months, the business news has been consumed with talk about ConAgra leaving and HDR moving downtown and the potential of new business throughout Omaha. So we're hoping today we might get a little tidbit of good information or any media out there, a scoop or two. David will speak for about 30 minutes, and then he'll take your questions. There's paper and pencil on your table. Please pass it around. Slip it to me if you can so that we have lots of good questions for David. Please help me in welcoming David Brown.
Well, thank you for having me here today. It's a pleasure. My wife reminded me this morning as I walked out the door. She said, remember the last time you gave a speech at that place? You had your whole family in a room because they were putting your face on the barroom floor. And that was a great honor, and we're very happy to do it. But now I got to stare at myself as I do this. So I've got to actually behave myself because I'm looking myself in the face. So, this has been a great future-focused week for us at the Chamber. On Tuesday, we hosted a very successful Economic Outlook Luncheon, which is our annual event to kind of look at what our members think is going to happen in the economy over the next decade or next year. And then actually the last few years we've tried to bring speakers in who would make us look over the next decade to try and figure out what those impacts are going to be on us so we can start addressing them before they get here. And this year we had a record crowd to hear very interesting firsthand insights from Rebecca Ryan. Now Rebecca Ryan is the founder and owner of Next Generation Consulting. She is a nationally renowned futurist and economist, and 12 years ago, she actually helped us launch our Young Professionals Council, which was one of the first Young Professionals Councils in the country, and is now arguably the most successful Young Professionals Council anywhere in this country of ours. She is in the business of helping cities and companies think around the corner to what's next. The underlying theme of her remarks was that America right now is in the waning years of what she called a 20-year winter phase, an economic period when the whole country is resettling, hibernating, and regathering. Now, we have to remember, she talked about winter. She also talked about spring, summer, and fall. And she actually went back to the American Revolution, citing that as our first 20-year winter period, followed by a 20-year spring period, summer period, and fall period. And this is the fourth time we've gone through this. So really interesting analysis of how our economy changes and what kind of issues we face on a couple of decade kind of a cycle that she's involved in. Now, some, unfortunately, are convinced that this winter is the new norm, that surviving is all we have to worry about. But Rebecca says that is not necessarily the case. We have always reset as a nation and come back stronger, emerging as a country that works better for more people. She believes Omaha is already making that turn to spring well in advance of what some other communities are doing. So we're at the end of this winter period that could last, in her mind, through 2020 on a normal cycle. But she thinks Omaha may well be out ahead of the curve, which gives us some really golden opportunities here. So for Omaha, she contends this is the time for ambition, not, in her words, freezing and seizing. It's kind of appropriate on the day when I got up this morning, I had to pull my winter coat out for the first time this year. The course we set as the business community will determine if we maintain the status quo or if we leapfrog over the competition that is still in the hunker and bunker mode. And she gave us some pretty cool ideas about how to do there. I've coined the phrase catalytic leadership, and I think it is something that makes Omaha a unique spot because we have a lot of catalyzing leaders. Now, you may ask, what is a catalytic leader? Someone who's not only comfortable with change, but is even more uncomfortable with maintaining the status quo. Catalytic leaders are willing to be instigators, initiating and sustaining positive impact in our community, and positioning ourselves to thrive today, tomorrow, and decades into the future. Catalytic leaders are willing to make the kinds of decisions and investments that will propel Omaha from a really good Midwestern city to a great North American city. And I'll tell you, with that message that she delivered, the Chamber is all in on this notion of we can jump into spring before a lot of our competition. We've always taken pride in our role as a catalytic organization. We're dedicated to fostering a competitive, pro-business environment and a great quality community. We're an organization committed to economic progress with the goal of community-wide prosperity. And as Ann already mentioned, over the last 10 years, the Chamber's economic development efforts have resulted in more than $5.5 billion of fresh capital investment in this marketplace. Our efforts to attract new businesses and keep existing businesses are backed by an array of regional assets, starting first with our incredible quality of life, our skilled labor pool, a solid infrastructure, strong financial institutions, low power rates, and generous business incentives that counterbalance a not-too-generous tax structure. We continually strive to be the best. Unfortunately, striving to be the best doesn't necessarily insulate us from every now and then taking a hit. What does Rocky Balboa say with his new movie coming out? It's not about how hard you hit, it's how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. Now, if you're a fan of that movie series like I am, you know that was Rocky's fame, getting beat about the head and shoulders continually and still winning. So we're not getting hit that often, but there are every now and then a community has to look at some challenge that's coming up. And it kind of identifies what that community is made up of, how you respond to that challenge. So, of course, I'm talking a bit about the most recent ConAgra announcement. Now, this has been a really interesting kind of month, couple of months. I mean, we started out with the euphoria of the HDR announcement to build a new headquarters downtown, and then the not-so-euphoric moment when ConAgra announced that they were leaving their headquarters from downtown. And then, of course, the HDR discussion where we went from euphoria to challenge because there are some discussions about historic buildings and those type of things, which I'll talk about in a second. Interesting how that roller coaster has taken place, but the world didn't stop just because those things caused some controversy. You know, we've had to be engaged in this process. So, you know, we've been asked a lot about what we knew about ConAgra, and I knew what you knew. I mean, we followed in the press all the discussions that were going on about ConAgra's health and activist board members and private label businesses and quarterly growth or lack of thereof, quarterly profits or lack thereof. And in the end, we reached out to touch ConAgra as often as anyone could humanly do it. And so my son asked me the other day, so why is it that you couldn't get in to talk to ConAgra as often as you would like? And I likened it to how my wife responds when a telemarketer calls us at dinner time. The phone rings forever, and we don't touch it. If the phone rings between 5:30 and 7 o'clock at night, we don't answer it. And that's exactly what was happening with ConAgra. I could knock on their door. I could camp out of their doorstep. I could try and find out where Gary runs in the morning. I could try and figure out everybody we could think of to make contact there. But if they are not interested in talking to us about their project and about how we can keep that project here, we can offer every incentive in the world, but if there's nobody to offer it to, we weren't going to make any progress. And in this particular case, it was clear that the internal planning that was going on was such that they did not want to include State of Nebraska, City of Omaha, Omaha Chamber, any of those normal discussions you would have when a company was debating what kind of economic investment they were going to keep in your community. They had either already made their decisions or were so far along in making their decisions that they really need to be talking to where their future location was going to be rather than the local one. So I was in D.C. on October 1st. With my two senior vice presidents with the trip of chamber members, about 30 of us, doing legislative work in D.C. And I got a call from Chris Kircher, who's on our board and exec committee, and he said, today we're announcing such and such. And I said, so when? He said, in 15 minutes. And that's when I found out what the numbers were, that the headquarters was moving to Chicago, that they were going to try and take 300 people with them, that they would lay off 1,000 people here in this market. And to be honest with you, our initial response was one of angst. I mean, I frankly always think that I can convince just about anybody to do just about anything. And if I just had got the chance to sit in front of these guys, maybe I could have convinced them to do something different. That wasn't the case. But still, you kind of sit back and say, geez, I wish I'd had a chance at it. But once all that was done, once that happened, we realized that we had an opportunity to actually frame the discussion. There was this huge vacuum that was going to be filled in a heartbeat with either incredible angst or incredible optimism, with a little bit of angst on the side. We decided for the second. And so after we kicked ourselves in the rear end a couple of times, we realized that we didn't have any time to waste, and it was time to start gearing up for how can we turn this into a positive for the community. So let me give you a couple of ideas, a couple of context here. ConAgra was founded in 1919 and moved to Omaha in 1922. The company's sales hit $16 billion in 2015, which made them number 173 on the Fortune 500. You know, one of five Fortune 500 companies headquartered here. ConAgra developed its current headquarters complex in the late 1980s. Very controversial. They were talking about potentially moving out of the state. We had no incentives available in the state at the time, and so LB 775 was created in order to create incentives that would help them stay here in town. And there was a little thing called Jobbers Canyon that became the location, and a very controversial set of historic buildings also came down in order to be the location for this really terrific campus that is now in the community. 30 years ago, let me reiterate, 30 years ago of investment, of jobs, of philanthropy, amazing run of what ConAgra has already done in this community. And so in the end, the company has said, it's just time for us to make a major change in our company. This is about business dynamics. It's nothing about the community. Incentives couldn't have made a difference because they never asked for any to stay. Location didn't make a difference because they never asked for alternative locations. In the end, it ended up being something where we had to decide, how are we going to turn this around? So this was a Thursday that they made this announcement. On Friday morning, we'd arrived back in our offices, and I found six people waiting outside my office door. All six of them had a strategy in hand to say, we want to go get this done. They had been up most of the night, our team, worried about the messaging and worried about what we were going to do next. And they came back with two real clear topics. Number one, we have very, very, very low unemployment here, and it's something that we needed to be able to combat. And we now have an opportunity for up to 1,200 people who are skilled, seasoned, terrific professional people who are now going to enter our workforce. What a marvelous opportunity we have to actually provide existing companies here in Omaha with a really great and talented workforce. But we also knew that we aren't the only ones that wanted those people. Every other community in the Midwest is facing the same challenges we are when it comes to people. So we knew that immediately my counterparts in other cities are going to be saying there's going to be 1,000 people available in Omaha that we should try and move to our town. And if I were the folks in Chicago, I'd be marketing aggressively to those folks about why you should move to Chicago. Now, I could give you a long list of why you shouldn't. And frankly, you're going to see a lot of that in the media over the next several months, as I show you later. But the fact is, we thought that this was a golden opportunity for us to do something here. So the first thing we did was 12 hours after the announcement, we had organized a meeting in the chamber for noon on Friday, where eight of the biggest companies in Omaha got together and brought 800 jobs with them. So these are 800 management or mid-management jobs that are available for ConAgra folks that are being laid off. Now, at the same time, remember, Union Pacific has laid off some people too, and so we've thrown all that into the bunch. By Saturday morning, we developed a brand new website, wedontcoast.com/jobs. And on that website, we had a place where people who were being displaced could put their profile and their skill set and the kind of jobs they were looking for, and a place where companies could sign up to have access to those folks. We immediately started setting up job fairs, cocktail parties where individuals from those companies could come and rub elbows with HR directors of companies. And in the end, we've ended up with more than 200 companies have come to the table with more than 4,300 jobs in middle management and management for people that are being laid off by either Union Pacific or ConAgra. We decided that the messaging on Sunday, by that Sunday, we had a full-page ad in the paper, "Our talent stays here. We're in this together." And our whole point to the folks seeing that ad was, we have an opportunity to, as a community, embrace you as existing Omaha residents. We want you to stay here. We want you to understand why you're here and help you find employment that will keep you here. We understood that action was the only answer, that we couldn't just sit back and let something happen to us, as we really were forced to when it came to the economic development part of this. Instead, we wanted to be aggressive in trying to turn this into a real positive. So our team at the Chamber is working day in and day out to ensure our displaced workers have the resources and information they need to connect with potential new employers and continue making their mark right here. As I mentioned, one of our greatest challenges has been our low unemployment rate, and this is a great opportunity for companies in this region to access a labor pool of talented and experienced and skilled people. We created WeDon'tCoast.com jobs site, as I mentioned earlier, to make sure there was a place that people could go. The activity for it is there every day, increasing, and our goal is to have about 1,000 job seekers signed up on that site. As of this morning, there were 420 job seekers on that site already, and as I mentioned already, more than 200 companies are there. Weekly emails are being sent to those job seekers to inform them of opportunities and encourage them to participate in upcoming events, including talent networking events, happy hours, and career fairs. Some of these career fairs are specific career-focused, so we'll have an IT career fair, financing career fair for those folks in the financial jobs, marketing, sales, management, etc. I was at one on Wednesday night at Dudley's in Exarban Village, where we had 30 or so employees who were looking for new work, trying to rub elbows with six or eight companies that were there to set up interviews and set up opportunities to talk. This is all part of a multi-phase 10-month talent retention strategy spearheaded by the Chamber and backed by area businesses. We decided that aggression made sense. The ultimate goal is to facilitate connections and keep our talent where it belongs, right here in our community. The communication portion of the strategy encompasses three goals: create awareness about job availability via billboards, radio, print, and social media, drive action by directing people to available information and services, and engage by encouraging usage of our online job portal, ongoing social media conversation, and event participation. We're working to remind displaced workers of why they chose to live here in the first place. First off, of course, it's quality of life. This is a place where you get all the big city amenities at a mid-sized city cost. We like to say that we don't go to Broadway, Broadway comes to us. I mean, we have everything you need here to have a remarkable quality of life. We have affordable housing and overall cost of living that's 10 to 15% below the national average. We have award-winning schools, a thriving cultural scene, and a wealth of options for activity. Matter of fact, our most recent ad for We Don't Coast is if you've seen our new book, it's a skydiver carrying a sign that says, "We're only as boring as you are." The fact is that if you want to find something to do here, you can find something to do here. If you're like me, there are too many choices. And we're trying to make sure people don't just end up on the couch because there's so many choices they decide not to choose. So it's about making sure people understand what kind of a place this is. And we're also engaging our 3,100 members to help spread the word about our efforts. At times like these, it also pays to remind ourselves that the presence of change doesn't necessarily mean the absence of stability. Our local economy remains incredibly strong. Matter of fact, at the end of the second quarter of this year, there were 9,000 more people working in Omaha than there were 12 months prior to that. 9,000 more people. And we expect to see that trend continue over the next decade. So while it's easy to get caught up in the drama, let's not lose sight of a couple of things. First, ConAgra is still going to be a top 50 employer in this market. They're still going to have more than 1,200 workers in Omaha proper, another 800 or 900 people in ConAgra in their manufacturing facilities, another 100 down in Lincoln. Still a significant employer in this market. We understand that there are some things that we will probably have a challenge with. When you have a headquarters, particularly a Fortune 500 headquarters, a lot of amenities go along with that, from volunteerism to philanthropy, really to even more jobs being here because they first think about headquarters places for jobs and anything else. We understand that that might be a challenge, but some of that philanthropy, some of that volunteerism is going to continue when you're a top 50 company in this market. As I mentioned earlier, we have a very strong and diverse economy known for steady growth. We're home to four Fortune 500 companies, actually until next July, five, and five Fortune 1000 companies, a feat for any city. We have 24 companies in this region that started here that now have more than $1 billion a year in sales. If we could just do one of those a decade, we'd be pretty happy campers in terms of growing this economy. And we continue to get recognized by all the national media as a remarkable place to live, work, play, and have a business. Fortune magazine named Omaha the second best city to find a job in the entire country in 2015. Time magazine, Time.com and Money, named Omaha the best big city in the Midwest in 2015. I think it's the first time we've ever been listed on a big city list. They must go from the top 50 as the big city. We're number 40, by the way, in the country. But to be the best big city that competes against Chicago, St. Louis, Kansas City, Des Moines, Indianapolis. Think about all those folks that we compete against, and we're named the best big city in the Midwest for this year. And over the past 10 years, as we mentioned earlier, we've had about $5.5 billion in capital investment. The 595 projects that we've done in that time frame, fully half of those projects are new companies to the market that had never been here before, creating more than 29,000 jobs. And most of those jobs are above the median wage. So we're very happy with what we're doing. And we've got to remember that our economy is still strong, despite the fact that occasionally you have some companies that decide they're not going to continue to invest here. So we know that we're not Pollyannish. We understand there's challenges that lay ahead when you lose a Fortune 500 company or a company lays off 1,000 people. But we hope that a year from now, when we measure the impact of everything that we've done, we'll have seen continued net growth in jobs. We'll have seen continued net growth in the pay scale for those jobs. And we'll continue to see Omaha being ranked as one of the best cities in America. This is an opportunity to keep our talent and our neighbors here, for our business community to step up and ultimately create a stronger and more vibrant Omaha. It's an opportunity, in Rebecca Ryan's word, for us to start turning winter into spring. It's been a gut check. We're going to do more than get through it. We're going to thrive through this process. And I want to talk about the other story I mentioned already, HDR. This is another golden opportunity. Once about every decade, Omaha has been able to see something pretty remarkable has happened from a headquarters perspective in downtown. So if we just start with Conagra in the 80s with their headquarters location downtown, translate that in then 10 years later into First National's really amazing First National Tower downtown. The next decade, it was Union Pacific downtown. We've had both Gavilan and now HDR coming in this decade. We need to see these big projects happen in the downtown area. And so remember, a couple of months ago, HDR reiterated its intention to locate a new world headquarters and 1,000 jobs downtown. But it had to be a relatively fast process because the building has to be up and running, has to be up and operational by January of 2019. And so these are great projects. And at the same time, they looked at a piece of property that was owned by Omaha Performing Arts. And as a result of some interesting land needs in this mix, Omaha Performing Arts also announced their intention over the next several years to expand the Holland Center and the performing arts venue there onto the property due east of the current Holland Center. Both of those announcements were joined with a lot of hoopla, but also some angst, because as you all know, on one of the pieces of property we're talking about, there are three old buildings, one of which is a federally designated, historically significant building. The other two are older buildings, but not designated. And there was an awful lot of angst about what was going to happen to those buildings. Now, for those of you who know this process, you know that as soon as somebody raises an issue, here's something that could be a problem, people go to the worst immediately, as though they know what's going on. And so if you watch social media the day after these announcements happened, you would have thought that the bulldozers were waiting at the door to knock these buildings down, and everything had already been decided. The irony is that there hadn't even been time to think about design because of the fact that HDR's announcement push forward Omaha Performing Arts announcement, they're going to do a project. They were thinking about it. They were starting slowly to move forward, but they hadn't designed anything yet. And so it sped up the process for their thinking and what they had to do on their project. And so we ended up with a question about what's the future of the landmark building and property and the path of that project, about the process for acquisition, who bought what and for how much and why, and were you going to use eminent domain or not. And does Omaha have a commitment to historic spaces or not? I mean, I think it was an interesting question. And then should you use eminent domain? In this case, it was not used. The mayor indicated that she would prefer not to use eminent domain if she didn't have to. And so she went through a process that I thought was very thoughtful, measured, to negotiating the purchase of these buildings. And within a short amount of time was able to negotiate a price that the existing building owners were willing to utilize. And so the next step was to turn those buildings over to Omaha Performing Arts so that they could start developing their project. And Omaha Performing Arts had to make a decision. What are we going to do with this? And immediately, the historic preservation folks said, wait a minute, we want to have a say in how those buildings are being used. And Omaha Performing Arts said, we understand that, but we don't even know what this thing's going to look like yet. It's going to be a mixed-use building on that property, but we don't know what we're going to do yet. And so, to his credit, Clark Lauritsen, who is our chamber chairman, executive vice president at First National Bank, has been acting really as a go-between between the Historic Preservations Group and the Omaha Performing Arts to make sure that the communication is on a level basis. And it's resulted in some conversations that are very constructive. a charrette that will be held by OPAS, which will be led by HDR, who designed the Holland. And these historic preservation groups are trying to figure out how some, if not all, of those buildings would somehow be incorporated into the new design, and if they could both get something that they need out of this. So there's really two sides of this issue, remember. Performing arts needs a certain amount of space to do what they need to do, and those buildings right now take up a lot of that space. The historic preservation folks say there's value in us preserving historic buildings in our market, and so we should try and do that as often as we can. So those are the two sides of the spectrum. Our goal is to get them to come to the middle. And as my dad used to tell me, if you're buying a car, chances are you're going to think you paid too much and the salesman's going to think you paid too little. And that probably means you probably got the best deal you can get. So chances are not everybody's going to get everything that they want, but we'll end up somewhere in the middle where the community represents a community that says we understand about redevelopment, we want to see new development, but we want to protect history to the extent that we can. So I think that'll happen. It's going to take a little while, folks. You know, the decisions haven't been made. The charrette hasn't even been held yet. But thankfully, I think the conversation has now gotten into how we can do something rather than should we do something. And I think the angst level is lower because people can see that they're being heard and both sides are talking to each other. Now, those are just a couple of examples of how a community that works and pulls together can be successful. Now, that's how Omaha has always been successful. We've pulled together. We've accomplished things together. We almost never do things on our own. All of the chamber successes that we can talk about, being Chamber of the Year this year, and all those kind of good things, if you point to what we did only by ourselves, I can't point to any. It's all about how we partner in this community, how we convene different people, how we organize the effort so that everyone is heard and ultimately the best thing comes out for the community. And I'll tell you, we're going to continue accomplishing more if we try and do it together. There's optimism about our future. And I can quote our survey that we just did of our member businesses and talked to Tuesday at our Economic Outlook luncheon as an indication of that. Our latest Economic Outlook survey backs this up, indicating that Omaha businesses are optimistic about growth in 2016, even more so than they are for Nebraska or the nation. For 2016, 36% of the surveyed businesses plan to increase capital investment, and 41% will increase the number of employees, and 60% anticipate increased sales for next year. Rest assured, the Chamber will work to perpetuate that optimism as our community continues to evolve, and that's exactly what this is. It's a long-term evolution by Omaha continuing to become this really great place that people want to live and work and play and have a business. We'll continue our drive to ensure more opportunity, a higher quality of life, and a brighter future for everyone who lives here. Our Prosper Omaha campaign, in my last words here before the questions, talks about growing our GDP and growing our population growth rate. An old legislator friend of mine said, you know, just 250,000 more people in the state would cure an awful lot of our problems. We're not going to have 250,000 more people in the state for quite a while. It takes a long time to grow. We're at about 1.5% growth a year. But one of our intentions here is to make sure that we grow our GDP by more than twice what it is right now, our GDP growth rate. And to do that, we'll have to double our growth of our populations, too. So if our population growth rates are around 1.7%, it probably needs to be around 3 or 3.5%. And we think our GDP growth rate should be in the 3 to 4% range, too. If we do that, all these great things you see around us in this downtown and the rest of the market around here will continue, and we'll all be able to see continued economic growth. Thank you.
So our first question for David is, how well do you think Omaha is positioned internationally to come out of winter before the rest of the country?
You know, I moved here from Greenville, South Carolina 12 years ago, and Greenville is, by all accounts, an international city. When I left there, there were 240 companies owned by international firms. If you walked around its version of our old market, which was a lot smaller than this, but nonetheless, their outdoor eating area on Main Street, you would hear 12, 15 languages being spoken virtually every time you walked down the street. A true international community with international headquarters and international customers and international suppliers, and they were not always that way. In fact, when I got there 10 years earlier, Michelin had been there a long, long time with their North American headquarters, but BMW was a relative newcomer in the market, and we brought about 200 of those suppliers into the market the 10 years that I was there. So I say that because even a community that's now known as an international center 20 years ago wasn't. And it took them to be very committed to making that happen and some economic development luck that enabled them also to attract a major reason why other international companies could locate there. I think Omaha has probably underserved the international market. We have a golden opportunity for growth in that market. We've got plenty of international relationships with our sister cities. Those are mostly social and cultural in nature. And I think our opportunity now is to try and build more international partnerships where we have companies that are actively engaged in doing business here. And we've got a very strong presence from Germany, a very strong presence from Denmark, a very strong presence from Japan and China. We think we can do really strong work with those companies on trade and ultimately then starting to bring direct foreign investment here too. So I think we're poised on the cusp of doing more internationally. We've got a very aggressive team on our staff that's doing more and more work in that space. But I think we're probably a few years away from being able to kind of grab that first big economic development success that will put us on the international map and enable us then to attract more, because they're just like McDonald's and Wendy's and Burger King. If McDonald's goes in a corner, you're pretty much sure Burger King and Wendy's are going to show up there pretty soon, because they've already done the research and people value, you know, their opinion. The same thing happens with international investment. If a German company comes here, other German companies will say, well, good, somebody tested the water, they passed the litmus test, we can go there too. And we expect to see that happening here over the next decade.
This question came in a couple of different ways, but Omaha is best big city on many levels, as you've described, but in terms of per capita murders in North Omaha or unemployment in North Omaha, we're probably not the best. What are your thoughts on promoting economic development to address high unemployment in North Omaha?
You know, that's a great question. Our chairman of the board back in 2004 was Dick Bell, and he stood up in front of an audience of about 1,500 people at our annual meeting and made a statement we didn't know he was going to make, which is always a challenge when your chairman does that for you. And Dick said, you know what? You know, we are so happy with what's happened in downtown and happened in West Omaha, really happy what's going on in the region in Sarpy County and those places. But you know what? All you have to do is look right up the road here to the north and to the south, and you see that we have not been successful helping everybody in this market. There should not be pockets of poverty that are so intense that we are ashamed of the numbers when we hear them. And so it was at that moment that he got us involved in community development in a way we had never been before. Because the challenge with North Omaha, and I'll focus on that right away, is that it's a very large area. It doesn't have very much dense commercial areas where you can attract more and more economic development to have more dense development follow it. It's lost tens of thousands of homes over the last couple of decades. I mean, there's just fewer people living there. It's got a lot of vacant lots. And unfortunately, it has a population that is undereducated and underemployed. Now, that's a nice way to say that they aren't good enough employees right now to actually get a job if they want one. Now, I know that sounds really harsh, but the fact is that whenever we have employers go into North Omaha looking for people, they have plenty of applicants, but a very small percentage of them are actually ready to work. Some of that is a part of our education system, that we have had an academic achievement gap with African-American students from majority students for decades. And we need to narrow that gap if we're going to make a difference in anything in North Omaha. It all comes down to education. Our education system for the past 20 years has ignored the fact that every year the academic achievement gap has gotten bigger. Now, I don't know why that is. It is so counter to everything else that happens in Omaha. We are first, best, most, and only kind of people. I mean, we think about how we can always do things really, really well and excel in it. And yet for a couple of decades, we let our education system let down the most suffering of our citizens. And there's no good excuse for that. That's also a long-term problem for fixing. So if 1,000 kids a year were dropping out of OPS, most of them from North Omaha, that's 10,000 kids over a 10-year period. Even if you started fixing the system 3 years ago, which I think is being done, it takes a generation, 10 years to a decade or to 15 or 20 years or longer, for those new kids to start hitting the workforce. So we've got lots of people who we've already failed in the system that we need to somehow get to a point where they can be earning a decent wage. Some of those jobs, most of those jobs right now are not going to be in North Omaha. It's very difficult to find developable ground in North Omaha. Lots of housing ground available, but almost no industrial ground, very limited commercial ground, And the stuff that is there is high risk. And so you're having to have a lot of philanthropy involved in the development of those projects too. I know these all sound like excuses, but what it really is reality that as a space to do work, it is more costly and more risky to do that kind of work in North Omaha than anywhere else in this market. And so we have to subsidize everything that is done in North Omaha in ways we don't have to in other spots that don't have as much risk. You know, some of the numbers that we have are terrible, but they're also about a matter of scale. You know, Omaha may be the best big city for jobs, but in reality, we're a pretty small town. If you think, take a look at the African-American population, it is relatively small compared to all those other big cities that I named. It's about 12% of our population is African-American. About 50,000 African-Americans live in this area we call North Omaha. About half of those are working age. And so you start thinking about the numbers. Now we're down to 25,000 people. If you've got a 25 to 30% unemployment rate, and now we're down to 7,000 or 9,000 people, that's a workable number. I know it sounds like a lot, but think about what Detroit's going through right now, or Cleveland, or Youngstown, or Flint, any of those other cities. They're facing hundreds of thousands of people in the same predicament. We have a reasonable, rational number that we can actually impact if we do the job right. And doing the job right means not only creating job opportunities in North Omaha, but making sure that the people that are coming out of the education system in North Omaha are ready to work, and that we have transportation systems in place to take them where the jobs are while we're still trying to develop the economy in North Omaha. And you can take that same message and move it to South Omaha with one major exception. There's buildings in South Omaha. I mean, there are lots of buildings in South Omaha, and if you drive down and see those buildings, most of them are full of little businesses that have started up employing people. We don't have the benefit of that in North O, so it costs more to continue redeveloping it. We haven't given up. We're working hard on it. We continue to try and find a place we can put manufacturing and continue that effort. Projects like 75 North is a major development that's taking place there that will really create something of density and scale that will make a difference in those neighborhoods. There's no doubt we have a lot of work to do, but I think as bad as those numbers are, we think we can impact them because they're not so large that you can't have something really positive happen as a result.
I've been wondering the same thing, so I'm glad to have this question. What is Omaha going to do with the empty space, both from HDR moving downtown and ConAgra moving to Chicago? Yeah,
great question. So let me deal with the HDR one. That's easy. It's in a hot spot for office development. When they vacate those buildings, I have a feeling they already will have been either purchased and or leased. I mean, we're thinking 2019. They're up by 84th Street and Dodge area. Those buildings will be leased up pretty fast. It's a pretty hot market over there. The ConAgra campus is a little more muddy because we're not quite sure yet, but they have five buildings on that campus right now. It's uncertain how many of those buildings ConAgra will move into. We're working with them on a daily basis to try and figure out the land and real estate deal there. But let's just suppose that there's a limited number of buildings that ConAgra will need for their 1,200 people. We think there'll be at least a couple of the buildings that are in that park will be available for either for sale or for tenants who will come in and lease those spaces. The buildings over there are mostly 120 to 150,000 square feet each. So to actually have 120 to 150,000 square foot office buildings available in downtown Omaha with a lake out the back door, I think we're not going to have a whole lot of problem in selling those buildings or leasing those buildings. There's also a couple of development sites right around those office buildings that lend themselves to lots of different kinds of development, from additional offices to maybe even some relatively high-style residential that look out over the lake and look out over downtown. And then there's that great grassy piece of property right on 10th Street that really becomes important from a redevelopment perspective to continue that development on 10th Street and maybe even provide even a better access to Heartland of America Park from 10th Street rather than trying to figure out how do you get down to the park from the old market. So lots of good opportunities with that real estate. I think it's probably going to be end of the year before we really kind of know what the ConAgra situation will be as far as what buildings they're going to take and which ones and how we can access those other buildings. But I don't think we're going to have a real difficulty in finding people to develop them and or take them as tenants or owners.
Can you discuss the Omaha's demographic outlook, both from an age perspective
yeah,
in the workforce?
I think so. We all get older every year. So eventually we'll all be retired. We just had a MAPPA just did a 2050 vision process for the community, and they came up with some really interesting numbers for this market. We're about 2 or 3 years younger on average than the national average from the age of our workforce. Demographically, we are seeing the fastest growth in our population is going to be Latino population. By 2050, MAPPA tells us that we will be about 46% of our population will be white, and the rest will be minority, predominantly Latino, which is a huge shift in what our market is right now. Right now, about 18% of our market in this region is non-white. So to go from 18% to 50-some percent is pretty significant change over the next 30 years or so. I think we have a really strong young professional environment here. It continues to grow. Our net in-migration, we measure this every year, net in-migration of young professionals. So this is the number of young professionals that move out compared against the number of young professionals that move in. And our goal, of course, is always to have a positive number. Well, we saw a positive number in 2010 and 11. We had about 2,000 more young professionals come into the market than left. You could pretty much write that off to be as a reason was we had jobs here and other places in the Midwest didn't. Not as many people left here because we had jobs here and there weren't greener pastures to look at outside the market. But then in 12 and 13, that trend turned around again and we ended up with a net out-migration. It was almost even, but a net out-migration of young professionals. And then 2014, something really different happened. We saw an actual net in-migration in 2014 and nobody could figure out why. There wasn't some big economic earthquake that caused it to happen. There wasn't any really good outside reason for it. So we think that maybe our messaging is starting to pay off, that people are actually staying in droves and more people are coming here for the kind of jobs that are available. And it is all about driven by jobs. People move primarily because of careers and jobs. That's when people leave. I mean, they may move for family. Most of the time, family becomes another good reason to take a job somewhere else because you got family nearby. But mostly people leave for their careers. And so we're hopeful that 14 wasn't just an anomaly, that we'll see 15 numbers also showing us a net in-migration. And that's important because that's where your professionals come from. Growth in your professional cycle really comes from the young professionals and then keeping them here and growing them in this market. So that probably doesn't give you all the detail you want, but if you go to our website, omahachamber.org, click on economic development and go to the demographics page, it'll tell you more about our labor force than you care to probably want to know.
We do, we're blessed, and yet it could be a little bit of a curse with our low unemployment rate. And in attracting new businesses, how does that enter into the equation?
I'm really proud of the fact that we've got low unemployment, and it keeps me awake at night that we have low unemployment. Because every company that is looking at expanding, whether they're here already or whether they're a startup or whether there's someone coming from the outside, ask us that question. You know, the state has 2.5% unemployment and Omaha's got about 3% unemployment. Where am I going to find my people? Depending upon the industry that we're in, some companies don't even are concerned by that because we have a large enough pool of people in those specific industries that there's an expectation that there's people trading back and forth, people moving their careers up and down the scale. And so the insurance industry is a good example. We've got a very strong base in insurance, and so we see a lot of people trading one job for another and moving from company to company. But still, we've got to be able to make the case that there are enough people here for the kind of jobs that companies want to create. And there are some specific job skills that are difficult to find in this market. The good news is they're also difficult to find in every other market. So if you're looking for programmers, code writers, software engineers, on the other end of the spectrum, electricians, pipe fitters, plumbers, tough to find any of those in this market. But it's also tough to find them in every other market. Even where unemployment is at 4 or 5%, which is almost double what we are, people have trouble finding enough code writers and programmers and electricians and such to do what they need to do. And that's as much a factor of the kind of education that we've offered over the last couple of decades and de-emphasizing trade and emphasizing four-year degrees. And the fact that our universities here and in other places have created lots of graduates, but maybe in career fields where we don't have a lot of jobs. So we've just completed a study of our workforce and found 57 occupations that are absolutely crucial to this economy. And we've been able to identify the shortages or the surpluses in each of those areas. So as of about a year ago, as an example, there was, the estimate was that there were about 960 pipe fitter jobs opening up in Omaha in a given year, and we had about 250 people coming into the market every year to meet that demand. Do the math, 700 jobs more than we had people, that can be problematic. So what you see is a lot of folks coming in from outside the country, outside this community, living in hotels and motels, working, and then shipping all their money home. I'd rather find 700 people who want to be pipe fitters and make $100,000 a year and have them keep that money here. Same thing applies to software folks. Even when we were in Silicon Valley last week, even they are having trouble finding people. Now, their problem is a little bit different. To find people to work in Silicon Valley, they got to be willing to live 2 or 3 hours away from work because they can't afford housing nearby. One company told us that land in Silicon Valley is going for $20 to $30 million an acre. It just boggles the mind. So how do you build houses in that kind of an environment? Well, the answer is you don't. And so how do they even attract people that want to have that kind of lifestyle? So while we may not have the numbers with low unemployment, we know we have about 40,000 people here who are considered underemployed, and we think 10 to 20% of those probably are willing to look at a full-time job if given an opportunity, more training, and a way to mitigate some of their circumstances that, like transportation or child care or the ability for skilled training or whatever those things might be. If we can mitigate those things, we think we have a pool of people that can take some of these entry-level jobs and be trained going forward. Still a challenge, but so far we've been able to meet all of them. When a company says, I need X, can you deliver? We've been able to deliver.
How does the Omaha Chamber work with the Sarpy County Chamber, the Council Bluffs Chamber? It benefits the entire area, but obviously we want businesses to come to Omaha as well.
So there's really two answers to that question. On the chamber side, all of we chambers, there's 7,000 of us in the country, by the way, from little my dream job at Captiva Island Chamber. If you walk over at Sanibel and you walk out on the pier, there's this little shack. It's got this little window air conditioner that says Captiva Island Chamber of Commerce, open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10 to noon. And if you get there between 10 to noon, half the time there's a sign that says gone fishing in the window. And so that's ultimately the dream retirement job. But we do different things than that kind of a chamber does, right? So lots of different chambers around the country. We all partner with each other in this region, but we also do our own thing. So the Sarpy Chamber has a very different agenda than we have. You know, the larger we are, the more things we can do. So you would expect that we have a little bit different agenda. But we do a lot of things together on an annual basis. We do joint events for our members every year. We do joint legislative work together. We do a lot of things together while still we do some things independently. The second answer to the question, though, is on an economic development side of things. We have a regional economic development partnership in this region called the Greater Omaha Economic Development Partnership. It's been in place now for more than 20 years. It includes 8 counties, 3 of them in Iowa and 5 of them in this side of the agenda. All of them have economic development staff that are located with us in downtown Omaha. So if you went to Plattsmouth today and asked about economic development, they would send you up the road to Omaha to talk to us. And the idea is that we deal with the region as a single economic entity. It doesn't matter to us if something locates in Omaha or if it does in Blair or if it does in Council Bluffs. That's not as easy to explain and accept if you're an elected official. But since virtually none of our money comes from the public sector for our funding, we think we look at this as a single economic marketplace. And so we end up seeing a benefit to the entire region if something locates in Blair versus locating in Omaha or in Omaha versus being in Council Bluffs. Ironically, half of our projects have ended up in Omaha proper, and half of them have ended up in the region. The half that have ended up in the region are far more numbers than they would ever have seen if they had done economic development by themselves. And so we essentially represent for a company. Let's say you decide to bring your company to Omaha and you want to talk to us about sites. We may show you sites in 6 different communities, but you only have to deal with one person. You'll get one package from us that talks about all the sites. You'll have one point of access, and we'll land that project wherever is best for your company. So now we're not worried about city lines and county lines anymore. Now we're worried about what that company needs and how we can meet that company that needs the best, and it ends up working well. So we partner aggressively with all the counties around us on economic development. We partner occasionally, more than occasionally, with the chambers around us to do some common things for our members. But in the end, we all end up working together to try and make this economy grow as fast as we can.
And final question. I see no working media here, so you can tell us what companies are on the horizon for coming into Omaha.
Sure. Aside from the fact my radio guy is right over here. Yeah, I remember that. You're not working media today, I guess. So let me tell you a story instead, okay? Because I can't tell you anything that I can't tell my board. I can't tell you either. All of our clients are done by code names. So that half the time, I don't know who the company is. And that may be a good thing because I give a lot of speeches, and you never know when something might slip out. But every year, we visit probably 30 or 40 different cities calling on companies that have headquarters there but have made investments here. And every fall, we tend to go out to Silicon Valley for a visit, to visit companies like PayPal and Yahoo and LinkedIn and Google and Bank of the West and Wells Fargo and a host of other companies who have made investments here. We have a very strong relationship with San Francisco Bay Area, ironically enough. Lots of companies that come back and forth here. And so our visit was there last week. And so we paid visits on all the companies that I just mentioned. The mayor was out there with us and on a day. She actually took a day off her vacation when she was out there and came and made a call on a company. And it's amazing to me what these companies tell us. Say, you know, we don't have a project in Omaha right now. That's fine. That's not why we're here. We're here just to make sure there aren't problems that we need to solve, et cetera. And at the end of the conversation, inevitably they say, you know what? I might have a project for Omaha. I hadn't thought about you as we talked about a data center. I hadn't thought about you as we talked about a logistics center or a finance center. And in the end, you start looking at things like what Yahoo has done here in this market. Now, some of you may know this, but I would be surprised how many that knew that all the finance functions for the entire Yahoo Corporation, with the exception of their CFO, is right here in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, you probably all knew they have their customer service center here, and they do. They've got 300 or 400 people there. And that they have a data center here, which they've actually tripled in size since they opened it. They also have an assembly operation here for all the servers that they bring and ship out to all of their data centers. They're all assembled here and then shipped back out. And they've got a big logistics location here. They started out with just a data center, a customer service center, and realized with the productivity that's here and the cost of doing business here and the way that people like to stick around and they have very low turnover, that maybe they should be doing more of their business here. So we've seen them grow incrementally over time to a point now where they're a very large employer here. And we expect to see more and more growth out of them and other California companies. And what we find is just getting a data center first is a nice investment, but it just tests the water for them. It just gets their feet wet, and they realize what more they can do here with productive workforce, low cost, and quality of life. They can really have a great opportunity here. So we use these visits as a way to kind of develop a relationship and let them know that there's other companies doing other things here and open their eyes to opportunities. This year, we've already landed 72 projects worth $640-some million and about 3,000 jobs we've already done this year. So that blows past our goals for the year. Our goal for Prosper Omaha, our five-year strategy, is $3 billion in capital investment between 2014 and 2018, 12,000 high-paying jobs, 150 new companies in the market, 150 existing company expansions, 1,000 small businesses that will grow their business here, and 100 new startups, plus development of 5 or 6 new industrial parks, a brand new talent strategy to address that low unemployment rate that we've talked about, a land bank that will help with housing in North Omaha and South Omaha, a financial vehicle that will help that land bank be successful, and a business climate through public policy initiatives that will make it easier for businesses to be here and for individuals to want to live here too. So I think we've got a golden opportunity. We're going to see this next decade could easily be one of Omaha's best. It's going to be exciting, I guarantee it. There might be some roller coaster times to it that we're going to see, but that just makes it interesting. So I appreciate everything that you all do to make this community grow, and if there's anything the Chamber can ever do to help you in your business or your organizations do your job better, just let us know. Thank you.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today's speaker has been David Brown, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce. He spoke on the topic, Business in Omaha, A Look into the Future. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, November 19, 2015, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. If you'd like to attend future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge in downtown Omaha. Be sure and listen on Monday, January 11th at 12 noon, when we'll broadcast highlights from the 2015 Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce Economic Outlook Luncheon, recorded Tuesday, November 17th. The keynote speaker will be Rebecca Ryan, founder and owner of Next Generation Consulting. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 500 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.